Welcome to the Lucra Podcast. I'm your host, Mindy Kinnis. My goal is to fan the flame of the dream in your heart. As my guests and I share our journeys on the path to success, you'll get an insider's look at how we got to where we are and the beliefs that create our reality. When you follow your heart path to ignite your mind and delight your spirit, you can create a lucrative life of freedom and purpose. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, my friends. I am here today with my friend, Nicholas Kuzmich. He is the founder of H2H Media Group, and we've already been having a great time off camera.
We're done. Success.
So we're going to attempt to have a real, like, not so serious conversation, but a real conversation at this point. Let's start with this. First of all, it's really good to see you again. It's been a long, way too long.
I know.
Time. Yeah. Thank you for being here. Totally appreciate you.
The pleasure's mine.
And let's start here. What exactly is H2H Media Group?
It's a great question. So our business is, well, there's two businesses. We have our agency, which is essentially a direct response social marketing media agency. And then we have a consultancy and a training arm that teaches people what we do. But what I've come to learn over the years is that oftentimes we've eliminated the human nature of marketing, and everything's become formulas and templates and protocols and influence and manipulation and all this. And so H2H simply stands for human to human, because everyone asks, do you do B2C, B2B, B2C, play B2B, what kind of, and I'm like, at the end of the day, because, you know, we used to be in the consumer kind of market, and they said, well, does meta advertising work for B2B? And I'm like, at the end of the day, it's one human that's writing a copy and representing a brand, talking to someone on the other side who's a human, no matter what their title is. And those two humans are going to have an interaction of some sorts, whether it's digital, physical, or whatever. So, H2H Media Group is human to human media group, where we, again, our focus is on direct response marketing on social platforms. But at the end of the day, we just can't forget that it's humans interacting with humans. And hopefully when people recognize that, marketing and business and relationships and sales and all that becomes so much more easier.
Yes. Thank you for putting the emphasis on that. That is so valuable and so very important. I'd love to hear a little bit about the journey to become, I mean, today you're like Nicholas Kuzmich, like people know you, you're well known online. I mean, we met through Sean, but then I think you also, I have seen you speak at different events that I have attended. And so like, you're the guy. How did you become who you are today? Like, tell me a little bit about that journey.
Well, don't believe the internet. That's what I'll say. but it is fascinating actually when you think about it. And I tell people that good marketing, you're only 90 days away from like industry celebrity status, right?
Isn't that crazy?
But that's what it is. Like me and you, we met at an event, but like the more you are public facing, whether you're speaking, whether you're on a podcast tour, a roadshow, whether you're on Facebook ads, like I look back and like every guru that we follow or every book that we read, or at least in the last, let's call it 5 years, anybody who's considered expert in their space, they're in that space because they've done some form of advertising that has got the attention of somebody that has then either put them on a stage or tell them to read a book or like all these other things. But at the end of the day, I mean, and I say that half tongue in cheek, is there could very well be, and I hate to admit this, there could very well be people on the planet who do what I do similar or better than me, probably not better, but maybe similar. Better than me, but like they just haven't gotten themselves out there, right? There wasn't an intentional effort. And that's why I also love marketing. And I know I'm going off on a tangent, so many breeds should bring me back.
We'll just go wherever we go.
Sure. So I think we both know anyways, Ty and Charlene, the creators of The Truth About Cancer.
Yeah.
And they came to me, gosh, I don't know how many years ago, when they just first started out. And they're like, Nick, we have this idea. We went around the world with a video camera to interview people around cancer. We've created this docuseries, and no one had known what a docuseries was at the time. We created this docuseries that we want to get out on the internet. Can you help us with ads at the time? And I'm like, seems like a great cause. Let's do it. So Actually, full circle, this is interesting. So we did it. They generated millions of leads, hundreds of millions of dollars over the duration of X number of years. I mean, they totally crushed it. And people ask me oftentimes, like, why do you do what you do? What's the deal about marketing? Because, like, you know, I was a pastor in my former life, Vinny. And when I came out of that, Forbes magazine wrote an article about me of like how we went from pastor to business owner or pastor to marketer. And it got published on CNBC and Yahoo News, which I thought, oh, I made the big time now. Little did I realize that like normal people, non-marketing people, don't like pastors and they don't like marketers. And so yeah, the comments were basically like
losing
like,
both ways.
Yeah. I remember one of the first comments I saw on the CNBC website that basically said something like, oh, that guy went from one scam to another. Like that was the reception I was getting. Ouch. And so often people associate this whole marketing thing with like influence and manipulation and persuasion and all these.
Oh,
negative.
I totally did. I used to think that.
Sure. And people ask me, why do you do that? Especially why do you come out of pastoring into marketing? Again, this is over a decade ago, but why did you do that? So back to the whole Truth About Cancer series. So we were at a Genius Network event, their annual event in Scottsdale several years ago. And I was having dinner with Sean, your Sean.
Yes.
And beside him was, I don't know what he called him, but like, I'd called him his bodyguard. Like it was this young.
That's what he called him too.
Oh, okay.
So, I'll tell you, because he thought it was so badass to have a bodyguard as opposed to like
kind of
an assistant. So he was the bodyguard.
Got it. So this is his bodyguard. And he was this young strapping kid. He's like probably mid 20s, like, you know, well-built. And he was there. My understanding anyway, I didn't ask Sean about it, but my understanding was like, he was there just to like be around Sean, make sure Sean was taken care of, make sure no one like caused shit with him or anything like that. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Anyway, so I'm sitting with Sean. There's a few other people there and the bodyguard. I forgot his name and I apologize. I don't remember your name if you're watching this. But we started to talk. And I got in conversation with the bodyguard and he told me, man, like my mom had cancer and like was going through this really big battle. And then she came across a series called The Truth About Cancer and she followed the instructions on it and it saved her life. Basically was like the short story of it. I'm like,
so amazing.
You know, the best part was that year, Ty and Charlene were at the Genius Network event. So I said, hey, just come with me. And I stood up. I'm like, Sean, I'm taking your bodyguard for a second. and we walked to the other side of where dinner was happening. And it was, again, it was a free for all. And I just walked up to Ty and I said, Ty, I want you to meet so-and-so. I forgot his name. I wish I remembered it. But his mom had cancer and the Truth About Cancer series saved his mom's life. I just want you to introduce him to him. And do you mind making a video for his mom? And so Ty got on the guy's cell phone, made a video for the mom and said, hey, I'm so glad, blah, blah, blah. Send it over to the mom. The mom's crying. He's crying. Everyone's. But like people ask, why do you do marketing? For that reason. Like there, I have a saying in my signature of my email that says you will change more lives with your marketing than you ever will with your product or service.
Oh, goodness. True. Wait, can you just restate that again for all the listeners in the back?
Yeah. So you will change more lives with your marketing than you ever will with your product or service. And people say, well, how's that the case? It's because more people are going to see your marketing than they ever will buy your product or your service.
Yes.
So if that's the case and you have, we're making assumptions here, but we're assuming that you have a product that's worth looking at.
Correct.
Right? That product can actually make some sort of positive impact on someone's life, even if it's a flashlight or whatever, like, there's an idea that that can make some positive impact on someone's life. And again, more people are going to see your marketing than they are your actual buying of your product. So if you do your marketing well, not only will you attract the right buyers, but you will change lives in the process. And there must have been millions of people who've seen the Truth About Cancer series when they broadcast it live, who never bought the product.
Yeah.
But they didn't care. They just wanted to get the message out there. So again, long-winded answer of saying, well, what does H2H Media Group do? Like, And how did we become, or how did I be? It's just recognizing that as a business owner, if your fundamental premise is how can I provide as much value to the world as possible? And I see that through the lens of marketing, how can I just bring value to people through marketing? Some people are going to hate you and that's okay. Cause it's the internet.
Yeah, that's fine.
But some people are going to love you and some people are going to appreciate it. And if your content's good and you manage to make some decent relationships through that marketing and one relationship leads to another, like had I had not met Giovanni, I would have never met Dan Kuchel, who was at that time Joe Polish's right hand, who then introduced me to Joe Polish. We started doing work with Joe Polish. I then joined the 25K network. I wouldn't have met you and Sean. Like it's this wild array of events, but it all started because I said, I have a message worth sharing and I'm going to put it out to the world. And again, maybe it's the universe, maybe it's right place, right time. I don't take full credit for this. Something happened somewhere along the way, but to the point, like anybody we look at now, any guru we follow, any author we like, any product we've bought, it's probably because at some point they've done a decent job at marketing. And so I'll go back to the statement to say like any business and or product is probably like 90 to 120 days away from becoming a marketplace celebrity where you're the go-to person and or product and or service talked about in your industry. And so like, that's why we do what we do as a fundamental driving force of, you know, what keeps us going every day.
That is awesome. I want to go back to this pastor to marketer thing.
Okay.
You and I may have some similarities in this.
We may have talked a little bit about this.
We probably have. I did my undergrad in theology and was very, very, very active in both youth ministry leadership, church leadership, et cetera. I was never a pastor of a church, but was doing a lot of things in that capacity.
Yeah.
Today, I am not doing things in that capacity. And I would love to hear a little bit about that transition for you, because as you said, both of them can have a somewhat negative connotation to certain people out there. But more importantly to me, I'd love to know about like, what was that shift like for you?
Yeah. So I had an experience in my junior high years that at the time I felt like I would tell people I met God. I didn't know what that meant. And again, it's hard to describe that, but I had an experience that felt like there was a calling coming up from within me. Now, some of us could recognize this as like, there's just that calling to do something greater, something deeper, something more important. But my worldview at the time said for me to fulfill that, I had to go into ministry because again, that was the only worldview that I had. And so I said, I'm going to run with it. Yeah. So to me, you know, leaving a major impact on the world meant that I was going to be a pastor and I'd have, it was either like, I think at the time it was like pastor or missionary. And I'm like, I don't want to die in New Guinea. So I'm going to, I'm going to stay local in my own town and just kind of do that thing.
Yeah. Keep it safe.
Keep it safe. I don't want to get, you know, and again, for all the missionaries out there, I love you and appreciate you. I was just scared spitless. I was like, I'm not going to do that. And so I went to like, I graduated high school early. I went to theology school early and I ended up with a master's of divinity and I said, okay, I'm ready to start a church. By then I'm 19 years old. I had started youth pastoring when I was 17 and I went off when I was 19, started my own church. And little did I realize like how unappreciative of a job and how difficult. And again, I'm a kid at that point as well.
Right.
So there's a lack of maturity that was definitely there. But I was just on a mission. I was like, I want to help people. And to me, my worldview says I'm going to help them through finding their faith. And so that's what I'm going to do. Now, looking at it in hindsight, there's a lot of skills that were developed and learned. You had to be on a stage every Sunday. So I had to learn how to speak.
Right.
You had to work with people's like real life issues. You know, I was conducting weddings on one weekend and funerals on the next weekend. So there's like a level of maturity that I had to grow into. And then looking at it in hindsight, like running your own church is very entrepreneurial. Like you got to pay your bills. You got to pay your rent. You got to keep the lights on. You got to keep your members happy. You've got like all that stuff.
It's quite similar.
It is quite similar, but even harder. I would say like it's the gauntlet to like really test if you want to do it. But I did that for 14 years straight.
Wow.
And it was interesting where God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, I felt like in like the final 5 years of me being there was calling me out and said, your time's done. However, you know, the other side of my mind is like, no, I'm going to persevere because that's what I'm called to do. I'm going to carry my cross and and even signs of people just coming up to me within my own congregation and even being like, Nick, what are you still doing here? You're called to do something else, something bigger, something better. I'm like, no, I'm committed.
Like I must suffer and struggle through this.
Exactly. This is my rite of passage. I'm going to just do it. And then something interesting happened where I said, you know what? Again, this is my last 5 years now. I was like, what's interesting is I feel like I have more questions than answers. And that caused some problems with some people, because a lot of people live vicariously out through their leadership, and their leadership has to be like, this is what it is. This is the truth. Don't doubt it, because they're looking for that kind of leadership. And all of a sudden I showed up to church one Sunday, brutally honest. And my message was like something along the lines of, and I didn't do it. It wasn't a statement. It was a question, but I said something along the lines of like, what if Jesus wasn't the Son of God? I'm not saying he isn't. Don't get me wrong. That's not a statement. It's a question. But from that position of question, how would we reevaluate the Bible? How would we reevaluate our faith? How would we reevaluate everything? The next Sunday I came and I just continued to ask questions. Well, what if hell wasn't real? And I wasn't saying I believed hell wasn't real, or it was. That wasn't the point. I was just like, what if? Right. And so I started to ask these questions, and people started to recognize what happened was basically half the congregation was like, what a breath of fresh air. Like, he is voicing things that I've held in my own mind, but was too afraid to mention. So let's explore these things together.
And the other half is freaking the fuck out.
And they were picking up rocks and about to stone me in public on the stage. Yeah. So anyways, what I started to recognize is maybe I'm doing more harm than good now for these people. Because they, you know, I was there as a leader to guide them through the faith, and now I have more questions than answers. Maybe it's just I'm not the right person to continue this journey with them. And so through a very interesting collaboration of events, I ended up, you know, resigning. My last Sunday, I believe, was 2010, was Christmas Sunday. It didn't fall on a Sunday, but we had our Christmas celebration. And that was my final hurrah. And I was like, you know what? I am never going to step foot in a church again, at least for another year. Like, I just need a break. Yeah. I just need to like find myself. I need to go on my own personal journey here and just like come to some sort of conclusions. Well, it wasn't until 2 weeks later or 1 week later, I saw an ad in an entrepreneurial Facebook group that I was part of when I used to live in Toronto, Canada. And it basically said, hey, my name is Giovanni Marsico. I've worked at Strategic Coach with Dan Sullivan for X number of years. I felt like I've got a behind the scenes look at how marketing works. And so I'm going to make a Dean Jackson type of offer to you. I didn't even know who Dean Jackson was.
Right.
I'm going to make a Dean Jackson offer to you, which is the cost to join my event is $500. But if you come, basically, you pay after the event. So if you come and you didn't think it was worth it, you don't pay a thing. If you did think it was worth it, we're valuing this at $500. So you pay your tab after the event. And keep in mind, Mindy, I just want to make clear that even while I was a pastor, I didn't take a salary from the church. So I always had a side hustle to pay the bills. And my side hustle was some version of internet marketing. Like, I was just like, what do I need to do to like pay the bills so I didn't have to take a salary from the church? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the transition, it wasn't as drastic as people think. Like, I had a side hustle to pay my bills. It wasn't very much, but it paid the bills. And so when I heard this, I was like, oh, now that I'm not in the church anymore, I think I'm going to dive into this marketing thing. Sounds like a pretty good offer. And I remember, and I told Giovanni this after the fact, I remember telling him and thinking to myself, no matter how good this thing is, I'm just not going to pay. I'm going to say it sucked. Not because I thought I was a bad person, but honestly, because I didn't have the money and I was
right,
like,
I get it.
I want to do this. So check this out, Minnie. So I click RSVP and I get an email with the event details, and it's held on Sunday, January 11th at an event center called the Berkeley Church.
Oh, of course. Back in
so
church.
It was a church that was converted into a, but it's still stained glass, A-frame stained glass windows, Berkeley Church. And it was an event called Archangel. And I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. Like, is this a fucking joke? Like, just last week, I'm like, I'm never stepping foot in a church again. And now I'm at an event called Archangel at a church. Physical church with stained glass windows on a Sunday morning where I would have been actually at it. So I'm at the event and a lot of stuff happened, but Giovanni gets on stage and he says, how many people in this room are using Facebook ads to try to grow their business? My hand went up, as well as 80% of the other hands went up. And then his second question was, how many of you are finding it profitable? and my hand stayed up and every other hand went down.
Wow.
And I had that light bulb come to Jesus halo. Like, it's like the sun beam came. This didn't really happen, but it felt like it did.
Yeah.
Like totally. The sunbeam hit the stained glass at the right angle to like shine a yellow light on me. And it was, oh, and I'm like, and that's when I made the decision. Oh my gosh, I think I have a skill set here that is not yet fully understood in the market. Mm-hmm. I got to run with this. And so he did this thing at the event where you can, instead of like just getting up and introducing yourself, hey, I'm Nicholas and I do this. He calls them 126 talks, and you have 126 seconds to not tell anybody who you are, but give them a nugget of value that they can use in their life. So very quickly in my mind, I'm like, it seems like these people want Facebook kind of ad strategy. So I got up there, I gave a quick talk around 126 seconds around how to do ads and whatnot. And after the meeting, everyone came to me, was like, oh, can we get your help? And blah, blah, blah. Can you teach me how to do it? So I'm like, yeah, sure, I guess. Like, so those were my first few clients. And then the question became, oh, you know, this is too complicated. Nick, can you just do it for me? And I'm like, I don't know, I guess. And the agency was born at the time. So we started an agency and a consultancy. And again, Giovanni was running his next event in LA. And he said, Nick, can you run the ads? And we ran the ads and we packed out the house. And so as a result of that, he's the one again who introduced me to Joe Polish, and like the whole spin of events happened. But yeah, like the transition was not as abrupt because I was kind of doing that already on my side hustle, but the sequence of events that led to it, that then led to me meeting more people and me meeting you and everybody else, was just, again, nothing. I wish I could take any sort of credit for it whatsoever, and I can't. But that's
kind of the fun of it, right? Just to like piece together all those puzzle pieces and just say, oh, like this is now the full picture. Here's what's bananas about this. I didn't know Gio very well. I had maybe met him at Genius, but just recently I now am in his Synergy program and I just had him on this show. So like, I didn't even know that you and he like went way back. I didn't even know any of this story. Yeah. So like, this is hilarious to me. I'm just like, oh, of course, like universe is like, wink, wink.
Yeah. Yeah. And I honestly thought like I'd be taking a year sabbatical.
Oh, I see.
And that was, that was over a decade ago now. But here's a great part. And for whatever it's worth, like, I actually think I'm making more of a significant impact doing what I'm doing now with more people and bigger reach than I was in my little 400 person church in Toronto. And I'm not to say one is better than the other, but like it all started with a desire to help people. And here now, 15, 20 years later, like the amount of people I'm able to help doing what I do now is far greater than what I could have done, you know, with that. So it's just, it's a crazy sequence of events that kind of lead to where we are now.
Yeah. I mean, it's the direct impact that you have, but also the ripple effect in that all of those people that you're helping to get their messages out into the world through advertising and marketing, they're now helping, you know, X number more people. So that is awesome. All right. I want to ask you this because I myself, having grown up in the church, in a Christian religion, I had some messed up, and I'm not saying I'm blaming it all on that. It certainly was my own system that I had going on internally, but I had some kind of messed up ideas about money and about wealth.
Yep.
So this is kind of a two-part question. One is a question I ask every single guest on this show, and it's to ask you what your personal definition of wealth is. But I would love you to expand on that a little bit and talk to me about how you see it coming from the world that you came from, because like I said, I had a similar experience.
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I, you know, looking back on it, actually, you know, I believe that we're just simply a makeup of our belief systems, and our belief systems and, you know, lead to thoughts, and those thoughts lead to actions, and these actions manifest our realities around us. And it wasn't until I started getting into some deep inner work myself that I recognized that most of the thoughts that I held were of the particular strain of belief that I had in my faith practice. And for better or for worse, there's some great things about love and all the beautiful things that I think we should have, but there are some pretty damn messed up ones as well. Money being one of them. So it was funny because I started out in a faith practice that essentially would quote verbatim all the time that money is the root of all evil, which is not actually an accurate quote.
Exactly.
It's the love of money that's the root of all evil, but let's go with it. And it would just shun you know, and that was one of the reasons why I didn't take a salary from the church, because I didn't want people to say, you can't wear those clothes, you can't drive that car, you can't do this, you can't do that. Because I remember, like, when I was 18, and people didn't even remember, but I was 18 or 19, I bought a car as I was a pastor of a church, and it was like this 1995 BMW. Like, it was a piece of crap that barely run, but it was a BMW, and I kind of always wanted a BMW at the time. And I remember, like, the heat I took from members of our church, because, like, really? Well, he's a pastor. I'm like, I bought this with my own money, by the way. It wasn't your money. It was my money. But just the image of, like, why would you do that? But then over time, I don't know if you remember the show. I thought it was hilarious. This was before Netflix even existed. I was going to say it was on Netflix, but it wasn't on Netflix. It was a TV show, maybe, or YouTube. Like, it's something about, like, gangster prosperity preachers. I don't know if you've seen the show.
I've never even heard of it, but it sounds always hilarious.
Always hilarious. Is these, like, pastors of, like, small mega churches in America.
Yeah.
But they were all just, like, blinged out in, like, 8G wagons and, like, big gold chains, and they'd show up, and it's all, like, paparazzi. Like, oh, it was all about the prosperity gospel. And so I didn't go that far, but, like, I started being introduced to beliefs around, well, maybe God doesn't want you to be poor per se, but that was a weird reckoning that I had to kind of navigate. So I've never actually thought about my definition of wealth. And so you're putting me on the spot a little bit here, but
perfect.
To me,
I love that.
Yeah. I hate that, but
I know, I'm sorry.
Well, rather than try to define it, what if I just explain what happened in the last 2 years where now I feel like I'm wealthy?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So I was born and raised in Toronto, Canada. And before I had kids, my wife and I worked together. We worked our tail off, like 14, 15 hours a day, all for this desire that one day we will blank.
Right.
One day we'll live in the house that we desire. We'll drive the car that we desire. We'll have the perfect family. We'll go on the vacations that we want, whatever. It was always that. Work your ass off now for one day, the pursuit of something that should hopefully lead to happiness. And I was in that grind, even when business took off and everything was great. And I could afford the houses. Like, I would, just for example, this is not a humble brag, but, like, it was a defining moment for me when we got to build our dream house in Toronto. We spent untold amounts of money on it. We didn't end up getting to live in that house because of a story I'll tell you in just a second, but we ended up selling the house. And the person who bought the house was Nick Nurse, who was the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. And then he just got fired from the Toronto Raptors. So he's selling that house and he's moving.
I just saw that you posted that on Facebook.
Yeah, to Philadelphia. But it was just like this nostalgic moment for me to be like that was a house that we built. And I know we never got to live in it, but a well-known dude with a lot of money bought that house from us. And it was just that moment. I'm like, huh? Like, you know, we were able to get from where we are to where we are today to be able to tell that story.
Yeah.
But I was in Toronto and we were able to afford the house and I had a fancy car and I still do. But, like, at that time it defined me. Now it doesn't, then it did. I mean, we were in this grind. We're in the middle of COVID in 2021, and we're like, we just need to travel. We love to travel, but we couldn't leave Canada because of all the COVID regulations and all that. So we said, where are we going to go? And friends of ours had just moved to this place called Kelowna, British Columbia. And I'm like, I don't even know where that is. All I know is Vancouver, but I don't want to go to Vancouver because it's raining all the time. It's gorgeous, but it's raining all the time. So I love Vancouver, friends. It is not liquid sunshine. It is terrible being soaked in rain 300 days out of the year. I hear you get used to it. But Kelowna's on the interior, just for example, is 300 days of sunshine throughout the year. You're surrounded by mountains and beautiful lakes and all this kind of stuff. And again, I'm a city slicker. I was born and raised in Toronto. That's all I knew.
Okay.
So we're like, let's go visit our friends in this town called Kelowna. Let's get out. Let's stretch our legs. Anyways, we come out here. We're visiting with some friends and, we're wake surfing for the first time and we're on our friend's boat and we're wake surfing and they're retired now. They had a huge exit. They sold their company for, I don't know, $600 million or something like that. They're now officially retired, enjoying their life. And they were on the boat and his wife, who's like early 50s, I think, was surfing, like teaching us how to surf. huge smile on her face and just enjoying life. And as we're doing that, Farron, my wife, turns to me on the boat and says, Nick, why are we waiting for the one day of that? I want that now.
Yes.
And I was like, and I looked at her, I'm like, so do I. And then the next thing she said to me was, do you think we could live here? And I said, I don't know, but let's figure it out. And so this was day five of our 10-day trip. The last half of the trip, we ended up looking for homes in the area. We ended up finding a home and putting an offer on it, which is the home we live in right now. And then we're like, oh my God, we got to go home and sell the house that we just built and never lived in. We just built this thing. We haven't lived in it yet, but we've got to figure it out. Anyway, that whole thing ended up and we came out here. And now, you know, the joke that a lot of the guys have with me here is like city slicker turning into mountain man.
I love it.
Here's my yesterday, Mindy, just for context. I woke up, I got some work done. I wake up kind of early. I got some work done. And at 7 a.m. at a hike with a bunch of my friends, it was a 2-hour hike because there's mountains everywhere. We had a hike, came back, did a little bit of work. Then we just bought like a cold plunge pool and all that. So got in the cold plunge, went in the hot tub, like refresh, got back to work a little bit. And then by about 2 o'clock, my wife's like, let's go wake surfing. I'm like, great idea. So we got in the boat and we went wake surfing for 2 hours with our kids. And like the kids were swimming, we were surfing. And you know, in Toronto, I didn't know it at the time, but we were redlining. Like we were working so hard for this idea of one day we can live a certain way. And then that moment shifted when we were on the back of that boat looking at Kelly surf. Where it's like, we can actually, like, why don't we just do that now?
Yes, yes, yes.
So we moved out here. And here's the incredible part. We still work just as hard, maybe less hours, but we work just as hard, but we play just as hard. Yeah. And now there's this like fullness to life.
You have like life force energy now.
100%. And like, here's the crazy part. I didn't even know what the heck life force energy was in Toronto. Cause I had one gear and it was on and it was burn the candle driving. And glow sticks. Yeah. And white knuckling the whole thing. And here we're like, yeah, no, you've got to just spread it. I call it like energy modulation. Some things feed us and some things take it away. And so, you know, in every day we should do things that feed us and take it away and modulate our energy that way. So I say all that to say like, if I had to define wealth, it's the life that I now live after all these years of trying to figure this out. My kids get to grow up surrounded by nature. We get to enjoy the simple things of life, like going on a hike in the morning, which I never done in my entire life, you know, but these types of things like these, again, I don't have a definition for it, but that's kind of my long-winded way of defining wealth. If that helps.
I would say that is one of the best definitions that I've heard is like, this life is it. That could you ask for something better? No, like that's absolutely amazing. So one, I commend you on just the answer of the question and two on the journey that has taken, like that you've taken to get to where you are, because it's not easy. It's hard. You know, there's lots of stuff that comes up in the going through it, but you have done that. And to be able to say like this life now is wealth, that amazing. So I have one more question for you and it's a four part.
Just one.
Well, maybe two. One for real, like for real question.
Okay.
This is based on an acronym called HERB, H-E-R-B. And the reason, and I'm going to walk you through step by step so you don't have to remember anything.
I'm like, should I get a pen?
Everybody, I like see your eyes like, I'm like, I'll take it one at a time. No worries.
Okay.
So the intention of this question, though, is for all of the listeners to get a little inside perspective on the what and the how of like how you've lived your life, how you've created the success you've created. Like, give us a little bit of detail. So the H in HERB stands for habits. What are some habits? I mean, you already mentioned like cold plunge, hot tub, you know, play. But what habits do you have that really like keep you, I love that energy modulation thing you mentioned, like what keeps your energy modulated?
I love that. I don't know how these came about. I think part of it is what we would call like defining constraints. And so the habits fit into the constraints, but the constraints are like, hey, you only have 4 hours a day to work. Right. So if you only have 4 hours a day to work, what are you going to do in those 4 hours? So for my wife and I, it's from 5 to 7 a.m. The kids wake up at 7. Then we'd spend time with them until they go to school at 9. And then 9 to 12 is our second window of work. And then 12 is when we do what we consider blissful activity. So nice. It's either we go to the gym, she goes to yoga or whatever. We go, so we put these constraints like, hey, when the kids come home from school, no phones, no work. Like it's them. And if they want to go swimming, we go swimming. If they want to do whatever, we do. If they want to go out to wherever things that we hate going to, we're just going to go to it anyway.
Right.
So we have those constraints. And then within those constraints, we have time. I call them blissful, like cortisol relieving activity. I don't know if that's the term.
Yeah. Stress reducing.
Stress reducing. Exactly. So if I look at my day, we bookend them with breath work. So first thing, when my wife and I get up, we get up at 5 to 5. We have a great app called Othership. A friend, Robbie Bent, is creator of this. It's the best breath work guided app that we've ever done. We do a five minute up-regulated breath work, which just means like waking your system and get going. First thing in the morning, we do that. Then we kind of quickly get ready and start working for 5 to 7. We also bookend the night with a down-regulation breath work. At the very end of the day as well. So like those are the two bookends. We always do breath work every day, upregulated and downregulated.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Before the breath work, my wife and I will meditate together, usually guided. She does some pretty intense, like I forgot even the term, some pretty intense meditation. I can't do that. I just do the easy guided stuff. But we'll do that before the breath work at the end. But every day I will find time to do some, I'll figure out a way to break a sweat. So whether that's working out, whether that's going for a hike, whether that's whatever it is. I just started doing Pilates recently.
Yeah.
And I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, but I always thought Pilates were for like middle-aged women who just want to like stretch and stuff.
And then you found out how hard it is.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And like, it's funny, you start doing these exercises with muscles you've never used before and you start shaking like violently. Yes. And then all the instructors are like, yeah, tremors, that's what we want. If you're not tremoring, you're not doing it right. And so I'm violently shaking as I'm trying to do these exercises, but I love it. There's something great about it. So we break a sweat at some point for at least 45 minutes every day. That's a habit. Read.
Yes.
At least 15 minutes a day. And to me, why I do that, instead of saying like a chapter or whatever, my modality of reading a book is I will read until there's an actionable item. And then I make a commitment not to come back to the book until that item is actioned.
Oh my gosh. If we all did that, that's so amazing.
Oh God. Yeah. The amount of books and content we read, but yes. We're preconditioned. Finish the book.
Yes.
Yeah. And don't do anything with it. And then we never do anything with it. And like, we all know we're not going to revisit our Kindle notes and come back to it a year later. Like that's not going to happen. So,
I say
read 15 minutes a day or until I get to the first actionable item and then execute on the actionable
do
item
it.
Before I come
I
back to that,
that
specific book.
Yeah.
So we read. And then again, I've made it a point to health is super important to me. So obviously we got the sweat portion of it, but I have a cold plunge. We just got it 2 months ago or so. We'll plunge every day or we'll sauna, nice. With it. Those are habits. And then another one that's, I just work into my day two, actually. One is just to kind of review the outcomes that I'd like to accomplish short and long-term. My friend Dan Martell taught me this, and I think it's great. It's whenever you do a repeated habit or a trigger, it reminds you to reevaluate, you know, what you're doing. So for him, it's every time he sits in his car before he drives somewhere, it's a trigger, review your outcomes and nice. Look at that. So I've adapted that. When I sit at my desk, it's another trigger, just review it. So you're doing that a couple times a day. And then I try to make, and I'm not good at this, so internet, don't troll me on it. I'm working on it, but I try to make one meaningful connection a day. So like, if I'm like scrolling through Facebook or Instagram or something like that, and somebody tags somebody, I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. You know, just reach out to say, hey, how are you? It's been a long time or whatever. Cause I think one thing COVID reminded us of, and it's a community that we've built here in Kelowna. That's beautiful. But at the end of the day, all we have is our relationships. You could take our money, right. our net worth, our businesses from us, but you can't really take our relationships from us. And so in my early years, unfortunately, I would have to admit that people were a means to an end for me. I had a goal. You're either going to help me get there right. or you're going to get the hell out of the way. Now I just recognize that people are the end. And so I try to restructure my life accordingly. But those are like a handful of habits that I'll try to do every day.
Nice. So the E in herb stands for environment. How do you set up your physical space to produce, to have those constraints, you know, to do everything that you need to do?
I love it. I'll answer this one quick. My office space and my workspace is very designed to ensure that it's what's the name? Neil Moore. Do you know Neil? He's an genius.
Oh yes. The musician. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. She gave this great talk one day that said, everything in your environment is energy and it's either sucking from you or giving to you. And so unfortunately, bad example, but I look down at my desk and I see an unpaid credit card bill.
That is
something that is sucking energy from me. And the more I look at that, it's not actually helpful for me. So either I put that away or I deal with it so I don't have to work with it anymore. So my office is very specifically designed. I've got like a lounging, sitting, reading area. I've got my work. This is my Zoom area. That's my workstation area. Like I have it designed in such a way, big window so I can look out my window. And that would be the second part of the question. Like when we were looking for homes here, one of the non-negotiables for my wife was an unobstructed view because it's a very mountain town. And so if you look out my window right here behind you where you are, it's just mountains and lakes and I get full view of that. Nice. We put our hot tub out there and we put everything out there and our outdoor environment is so, yeah. I have recognized, and I've already alluded to this, but like where I live and where I do life is one of the greatest contributing factors to how I feel. And I didn't know that before.
Oh, wow.
So the entire environment, whether it's the physical desk and the colors that are selected for everything, as well as where we choose to live and the views that we have from our office are paramount. I wouldn't have said this 4 years ago, but now that I'm here, non-negotiables.
I'm glad we're talking about it now then, because I totally agree with that. So, so, so important. So the R in resource, or sorry, the R in herb stands for resources. Yeah. Mm. And that could be books, programs, courses, people, whomever. You already mentioned, you know, the relationships, your network.
Yeah.
What other resources and specifically which ones have been most impactful to you that you would recommend to others?
It's an interesting question because I feel like that answer is seasonal, right? Because someone always asks me like, what's your favorite book? I'm like, well, depending on what season you are in life and what you need.
Or which genre.
Exactly. Which genre. So rather than specific ones, like if I look back, and I just try to give credit where credit's due. And I know that by doing this, I'm going to like isolate out people out. So I apologize. It's like when you win an award at the Oscars and you forgot to thank your
producer. Can't name everybody.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. But like, you know, you're in Giovanni's program. He's been a close friend of mine. He was a great resource to like helping me where I am today. Joe Polish at the time, 25K Genius Network was a great resource for me at the time. I spent 7+ years in Jason Gaynor's group mastermind talks. Whereas where my community that I now live with in Kelowna, like within that 18 month window, 12 families moved into this Kelowna area. So we have this like built-in community, which is
That's
amazing,
awesome.
But that all came from, you know, Gaynard's mastermind talks thing. You know, so rather than kind of continuing to name single things off, I would say that my greatest resource, whether or not knowing it or not, has always been the outcome of being part of some sort of community / network / mastermind / program / however you want to define it. And look, there's seasons in our lives. And so I'm no longer in these groups that I used to be because I've evolved as a human and I'm going on to other things. But any good relationship, any good resource, any good book, any good course, any good lesson, any good training, any good relationship, like we met.
Yeah.
So I would say that if you have to double down on something, double down on either some sort of a network mastermind-ish type thing or some sort of a coaching program where you could also learn from people you respect, but also be in a community. Because again, and we've already alluded to this, like relationships at the end of the day are everything. If you can surround yourself with great people, and it costs money to do that, but that's okay. That's the greatest investment you can make.
That would be
the resource that I might speak of there.
Nice. That is awesome. And I love that so many of them are connected too, because, you know, we had Genius, I think, where we met, but then where I saw you, I just am now thinking about it, was Brian Kurtz's program. So
that's
like
right.
Just so
I
many
love
different,
Brian. Oh,
I know
man.
He's been on the show too. He's a dear friend and like so many great people in that whole huge community. So let's wrap this up with the B.
Okay.
B stands for beliefs. What are your current, your current worldviews or the ways in which you see the world that have been the linchpins, like have been the main things that have helped you achieve everything that you've achieved or become who you have become?
Well, on the bigger meta level, I've come to understand over the last few years after doing a lot of deep work. And we always hear this. We watched whatever the movie was, The Secret, and we read Napoleon Hill and all that. And there's all this talk about like you attract what you believe in, and so on and so forth. I think a spinoff of that that I heard recently that I really that resonated with me. It triggered me, but it also resonated with me.
Oh, well, those are the best ones.
Yeah. Is that we only attract into our life that which we feel worthy of.
Mm.
And that hit me because I'm like, no, that's not true. I track all this good and the bad. Well, I'm attracting it all. Like I take responsibility for these subconscious thoughts that are going in my mind. But like, I started to recognize like whatever I have in my life right now is only capped at what I believe I'm worthy of receiving. And so my work on a personal level is to open up and to, a great doctor friend of mine who took me through one of my earlier journeys, let's call him, said something along the lines of, it's not about becoming anything new. It's about unbecoming all the trash that we've attached to who we really are. So my journey in the belief system is identifying the things in my life that have latched on to me and unbecoming those things to better represent who I really am. And that's a lifelong journey I recognize, but between the worthiness and just recognizing who I really am, I think if we can get to that point, we can create the lives we desire, we can have the impacts that we desire. And the only thing really holding us back are some of those thoughts around what we're worthy to receive.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And to that journey, I would say hugely, I'm a big, big, big advocate of, and I've talked a lot about all that stuff on this show. So yes to all of that, to doing the work. Nick, this has been amazing. If people are like, so holy cow, I want to know more about this guy. I want to follow. Maybe they want to work with you, whatever it might be. Where would you like to send them?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is I'm the only Nicholas Kuzmich on the planet.
Hey, that's like me. I'm the only Mindy Kuzmich.
No kidding. Really?
And I love that because there's only one.
Yeah. I love that too. Under the condition that you can spell my name right. Like, well, I'm sure people are like, how do I spell Kuzmich? Like, is it K? Is it? So
exactly.
It's easy to find me on the interwebs because it's Nicholas Kuzmich. I think what I'm most proud about as of late is I have a newsletter at nicholaskuzmich.co, so .co instead of .com, where I just kind of share my thoughts every week. Every Thursday, a new thought gets published, usually around like business growth and marketing, but oftentimes throughout some of this other stuff. I don't know if you could tell, but like over the last few years, we've really dedicated to a lot of inner work stuff and consciousness and understanding. So there's some thoughts around that as well. But yeah, it's just a really easy, free way to get into my world, know what I'm thinking, maybe get some insights around how to improve and build your business. And then that'll lead you to all the other social channels and whatever else. But yeah, nicholaskuzmich.co is a great free way to get some updates and insights about what's going on in my world.
Perfect. For those of you listening, I will link to that. So it's just very simple. You can just click the link either in the show notes at lucra.com or on YouTube. It'll be in the comments down below. Nick, like I said, this was absolutely amazing. So great to catch up with you. And thank you so much for your wisdom today.
Well, no, thank you for the work that you do on this show. And let's not make it a whole bunch of years before we do it again.
Thanks ever so much for listening. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help you create a more lucrative life. One, subscribe for free to my lucrative newsletter for weekly insights on business, money, and mindset. Two, join Club Lucra to connect with a like-minded community so that you don't have to go it alone. Three, work with me one-on-one to chart the course from where you are to where you want to be. Everything you need is at lucra.com. That's L-U-C-R-A.com. Lucra, where wealth equals well-being.